Welcome to the Gooder Podcast. I'm your host, Diana Frank. As partner and CMO of Retail Voodoo, an award-winning branding agency, I have met and worked with some of the most amazing women in the naturals industry, food, beverage, wellness, fitness. And as such, I decided to create the Gooder Podcast to interview and highlight these great people and subject matter experts and have them share their insights, expertise, and passions in helping small businesses all around the world become gooder. I'm so excited to introduce my guest today. Cynthia Tice is founder of The Lily's Sweets, the no sugar added sweets brand made for chocolate lovers everywhere. She is a, this is my title. I hope you like it, Cynthia. She is a founding mama in the natural food industry, cutting her teeth by opening a natural grocery store back in Philly in 1978. And during this foundational time in the community, and with keen observations of the sweetening of the American diet and a longtime user of stevia, she opened the opportunity, or this opened the opportunity to experiment and create a chocolate treat to satisfy her own chocolate cravings. Today, Lily Sweets remains a leader in the no added sugar movement with a mission of reinventing the packaged food industry. And of course, since stepping down from Lily's, you can find her working with nonprofits and mentoring young entrepreneurs. Hi, hi, Cynthia. Welcome.
Hi, Diana. Thank you so much for having me here today.
Of course. So you're in Philadelphia today. How's Philly?
Philly's great. I mean, it's a cold day today, but okay. It's so fun to be here. And I love Philly. It's back to my old hometown.
That is awesome. And I am so excited and have all my toes and fingers crossed for Expo East to happen this year, because that's in your hometown, hey?
Yes. And yes. Super excited and fingers crossed on this end as well.
Yeah. So funny. When I think of Philadelphia, I always got to go Philly. I don't know where that comes from. It's maybe my West Coast translation. And Philly's probably like this super awesome modern town now, but I've got this old vision in my head.
No, we've got the used guys community, like close by. So you're not, there's a little of everything.
There's a little bit of everything. I like that. Sounds like a little bit like Chicago in some ways.
Yeah.
Well, hey, listen, we didn't get together here to talk about Philadelphia. What we did want to talk about was, well, first of all, wanting to share your extraordinary journey in finding and then also kind of building this creative community, or this, I'm going to call it creative naturals community, through Lily's Sweets. But before we do that, maybe give us a little high level of Lily's. Why does it exist? And maybe a little history.
Sure. So, I mean, you kind of said it in the intro. I mean, Lily's really exists because I am an avowed chocoholic. I love chocolate. And I really got to the point where I wanted to eat it every single day. And I didn't want to eat a little bit. You know, people always say, oh, if you want a little chocolate, you can have chocolate every day, just eat a little bit. Yeah. And moderation is not really part of my vocabulary, so that wasn't particularly a good option for me. Uh-huh. And I've been a sugar avoider for years. I mean, years and years and years. And since I wanted to really eat chocolate and eat it abundantly and joyfully and without censor, I really wanted to create a chocolate that was sugar-free, that tasted really, really good.
Mm-hmm. Well, you are a human after my own heart. This, I'm not a big fan of moderation myself, especially when it comes to the sweet. So I knew I liked you. I knew. Now, when you and I spoke about what we could talk about and what your passion was, you gave this incredibly rich story of what was happening around you as the naturals industry was building. And that's kind of why I put you on the founding mama's front, just simply because there was so much that you were doing and so much of an impact. Now, as I understand it, I'm going to try to compress a lot of this just to kind of set up the question, but there's like three big pivotal moments in the last 25 or 30 years that sort of opened the door for Lilly's to set its roots and really for the naturals industry. And that's the rapid decline of the American diet, kind of this shifting from whole foods to processed foods for a variety of reasons. There was this Alar scare that maybe we might touch on here in a little bit. And of course, stevia's approval for use for human consumption or for just for consumption. And behind the scenes, we're seeing things like whole foods accelerated growth through acquisition, moving outside of Texas. And then there was a moment in, I'm going to call it in the room when it happened, a little bit of my Hamilton reference, at a conference called the Transitional Shopper, where you were witness to an industry shift around consumers and how retailers needed to pay attention to consumers. So let's start in the way, way beginning before we go through all of this. Why naturals in the first place? Like, this was, of course, before stevia use. So why did you go into naturals? What was the calling there?
So why I got into naturals was from personal need. So when I was in my late teens and early 20s, I didn't feel well. And I was never like concretely diagnosed, but I suspect that I had like irritable bowel or some kind of like digestive issue.
Yeah.
And, you know, I went to a lot of doctors and there was nothing really significantly wrong, but I just felt terrible all the time. Mm-hmm. And I clearly remember sitting in my college cafeteria at Temple University, and I was complaining, as I always did, how I didn't feel well. And some literally random guy turned around and he said to me, "Well, no wonder you don't feel well. Look at what you're eating." And I have to tell you, it was like he smacked me across the face. And I was like, "What?" I've been to all these doctors and no one ever questioned me on my diet. But you know what? That sounds really reasonable. And I think I ought to consider that.
Yeah.
So I began to research on my own. You know, and I wasn't eating anything that was natural in those days. It was all like, you know, it was a diet that was like primarily like coffee and corn chips, you know? Yeah. And so I changed my diet and I immediately felt better. I mean, it was
really
so soon. And that was like, I became a zealot. I mean, I felt so much better and it was so enormous to me that I just wanted to tell everybody. Mm-hmm. So I started with my family, and I'm sure I wasn't all that endearing because I used to, you know, I would go to family dinner and bring my own food. Then I graduated college and I come from a family of entrepreneurs. We're retailers. So at that point, my family said, "Well, what are you going to do next? And do you want to go to grad school? Do you want to, you know, what are you going to do?" And I said, "I'd really like to open a natural food store." And that was 1978. And they lent me like 10 grand and I opened a natural food store. Yep. And it was really tiny location. And in 2 years, I ended up moving. So in 1980, I moved to my second store. And I ended up owning and operating a natural food store in Philadelphia until 2000.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So it was quite a long time frame. And, you know, I really got to see the industry grow. You know, I really got to see these kind of hallmark occurrences that, you know, were the history of the natural products industry. And, you know, I mean, I think the industry was growing, you know, it was slowly growing. It was, you know, garnering support and, you know, customers were interested.
Yeah.
But like somewhere around, and I'm pretty sure it was like around 1989
mm-hmm.
was when the Alar scare happened. So the Alar is a chemical that is put on apples.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure it's banned now, but
there
was a giant commotion about it. And Meryl Streep, who was a young mother at that time, formed a group called Mothers and Others and really publicized the fact that apples, you know, were grown using this really dangerous chemical. Mm-hmm. And she was, she, her point was that, you know, apples are largely a child's first food. You know, they're one of children's first foods. You know, they eat apple juice, they drink apple sauce, you know, they eat applesauce, drink apple juice.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
You know, it's, you know, and she was like, oh my God, you know, we're giving these like tiny children, these tiny little bodies, this toxic chemical.
Yeah.
And, you know, so she started to make a lot of, you know, a public appearances around it. And people that we had never seen before shop in a natural food store started to convene on natural into the stores. And it was so big. It was so enormous that I remember that apples were like sold out.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah. I mean, the supply and demand was so pressed that organic apples were nowhere to be found.
Yeah.
So, but what that did was it just created this unbelievable awareness mm-hmm. about organic that had mm-hmm. had not previously been there before
mm-hmm.
and it's sticky. And so, you know, the new customers that we got stayed. So it was a very big event.
Wow. And so this is, you know, a lot of the people that are going to be listening here, even myself, you know, I sometimes go, oh, there was a time before social media. You know, and I also remember this, I don't know if this was still around that time, but, you know, organics did not look as lovely as they did right now. So to have this mass convergence was kind of a cultural phenomenon, right? Because people were like, oh, visual is not as important anymore in this moment. So there were, it seems to me like a few things changed in the consumer's eyes based off of this one event or this one, I guess, event, you know.
I think there was a hardcore group that really believed,
sure.
you know, that part of growing food and, you know, there was a pretty decent amount of, you know, kind of a hippie movement of people that, you know, really believed that chemicals, you know, when you were growing food with chemicals, it was leaching into your food
yeah.
and making, mm-hmm. and that made a difference. But Meryl Streep provided and articulated an awareness that was not necessarily heard before and absorbed mm-hmm. before,
mm-hmm.
you know, by such a big consumer group, you know, and her argument that not only was this chemical remaining in the final product, but by feeding your children who had smaller bodies than adults, you know, that could make a difference, I think really resonated with mothers in particular.
For sure.
So I think she really catapulted the industry to a new level.
Just in that moment. That's interesting. Yeah. And then was it at that time that there was this, there were two, I don't remember, were there two different events or was it the FMI event where with the Whole Foods conversation and the education? Maybe share that story because I think that fundamental shift of course we've adopted, but even still some retailers don't keep in mind. So share that one for us.
Yeah. So again, the Meryl Streep event was like in 89.
Yeah.
And so for the next 10 years, which the FMI event was occurred in 2000,
mm-hmm.
for the next 10 years, we continued to see, accelerated growth in mm-hmm. the industry.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the other things that I think was interesting that happened was there became a growing awareness of GMOs.
Okay.
So, you know, I heard for the first time of GMOs in the early 90s.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, prior to that, I had never heard of GMOs before mm-hmm. either. But there was this man named Craig Winters who
okay.
actually started this organization called the Campaign to Label GMOs. And that was the first time that I ever heard of GMOs.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And he was part of the natural products industry and he sent around a pamphlet. And the pamphlet described how Monsanto was literally building pesticides into seeds.
Right.
And the pamphlet told this story that was like hair-raising to me of this field that was observed when a pack or a, I don't know what you call a flock of, yeah. of mammoth butterflies landed on the corn and they instantly died. So they like fell off the corn and died. And oh, I mean, I don't actually know if that story is even true, but that was, right. that was what we heard.
Yes.
And it started this another kind of like big movement within the industry that I also think harnessed other people. So what happened was the industry was just growing and growing and growing. Yeah. And at a certain point, conventional retailers began to see that that natural products was here to stay.
Yeah.
So, you know, I sort of think of what was formerly called natural products is now called better for you.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, they began to, for the first time, to see that better for you foods was something that people were interested in.
Yes.
They wanted them.
Yes.
And there began to be a lot of education and a lot of research, consumer research that was being shared with supermarket retailers. Mm-hmm. The Hartman Group in particular was reporting consumer research and, you know, and so there was more and more interest. And in 2000, I attended a seminar that was, jointly provided by the Food Marketing Institute, FMI, and St. Joe's University that's here in near Philly. Mm-hmm. And it was just this really big, interesting symposium that was given by the academics at the Food Marketing Institute, mm-hmm. as well as like Hain Celestial participated.
Sure.
A big PR group participated in it, who was spearheading kind of the initiative of helping supermarket retailers understand what was happening, this whole movement that they called whole health.
Yes.
And then a lot of supermarket retailers also attended. And it was, and Whole Foods attended.
Of course.
As well.
Yes. Yeah.
And it was fascinating to me from so many different perspectives. It literally changed my trajectory for my next step in the industry.
Yeah.
So, what they were reporting was, you know, that this that better for you foods was here to stay, that more and more consumers wanted it, but that it required education, you know. So if you put these products into a supermarket's assortment, it was requiring that you also educate the consumer.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember clearly during this lecture where where all of these facts were communicated to this giant group of many different retailers. So like Wegmans was there, Acme was there, you know, just a lot of different local retailers. And some guy raises his hand and he stands up and he goes, "What do you mean we have to educate consumers? How are we going to do that?"
Yeah. Wow.
And that was another one of those light bulb moments for me where I was like, "Oh my God, I've been doing that for 20 years. I know exactly how to do that."
Yes.
Yes. And then there was one other thing that was also a giant light bulb moment for me. And it was that Whole Foods stood up and started lecturing, you know, this group. And somebody in the audience raised their hand and said, "Well, you have all these plans for aggressive growth. You know, you've now bought Bread and Circus and you've now bought Mrs. Gooch's and you've bought Fresh Fields. Like, where do you think your consumer base is going to come from? You know, like, there's just not a big enough group." And and the woman said, she said, "Let me be very clear. We are not after the natural products consumer.
Yeah.
We are after your consumers."
Oh my goodness.
And it was kind of like this dead silence in the room. And that was also another light bulb moment for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so much so that I literally sold my store.
You did, in that moment.
Yeah. I said, you know, this is my next career move. I was sort of at the point, you know, during the time where I had been in the store, I had gotten married, I had children, I had a 10-year-old and a 7-year-old at home, and I wasn't seeing very much of them. And I thought, you know, I'm gonna do something else, and I'm gonna consult, you know. And my first job is I'm gonna consult with supermarket retail,
conventional
grocers who really are struggling to have this expertise of how to attract consumers that are interested in natural, you know. And it was, you know, it was kind of a bold move for me, but I did it. I cold called some retailers in our area. I fell into some really interesting, clients, and I ended up doing consulting all across the country to retailers that, you know, I kind of created this turnkey program where I would, I would present an assortment and then follow it up with marketing. And it was super fun. I loved it. And, I did that and then switched and went into including brands. And I did that for about, until I launched Lily's.
Until you launched Lily's. And Lily's, you know, I mean, these are big initiatives. I'm starting a new store right out of college to, I'm advising the largest chains on how to start shifting their business models to starting your own CPG. Like, you're not, you know, these are big. You don't do small things. It sounds like, you know, you are, if you're going to do something, you want to change the world. I mean, it's pretty fantastical. And it, Lily's seems like such a natural transition to me, at least, you know, moving from the retailer side and interacting with a consumer at a different level. And especially since it's still, again, a labor of personal love. You know, you went from your store and what your needs were then to filling another need. Nobody's doing this chocolate. I need this chocolate. I'm going to make it myself. That's the way it's going to be. Is this you? Is this just your DNA? Do you know, like when somebody comes over to your home, there's no such thing as a cake for a party. It's like, you know, you've got an explosion going on. Is this just part of your natural DNA, or just maybe part of your business DNA?
You know, it's, I guess, because I come from a family of entrepreneurs. It never occurred to me to think that it was a big risk.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that I'm not risk adverse. It's just that, you know, I'm very used to being my own boss. You know, I've never worked for anyone except for very short periods of time where I was like, oh my God, this is a giant mistake.
Yeah.
I'm not very good at being told what to do, for better or worse. You know? So you know, being my own boss was always the best solution for me. And I'm actually not really all that collaborative.
Oh, really?
Told.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm trying to get better at that. Certainly with networking and mentoring and, you know, but that's not my natural inclination is to work pretty solo.
Yeah.
So, that's been a real growth opportunity for me and something that I actually am loving.
Yeah.
But, the one constant was always the industry. Like, I really, really found a home in the industry. Mm-hmm. I love our industry. I just feel like it's true right livelihood. Mm-hmm. And, I just feel like there's so much opportunity to do good in the industry. Yeah.
And, agreed.
And, you know, that was really the constant.
Yeah. Well, now you have been, you've been at some kind of pivotal moments, especially in the last few years. I think Lily's is a giant example of how food technology and ingredients, green science, all of these types of things have kind of created opportunities for us to have brands like Lily's. And then, of course, since then, there's been an explosion. When you think back, I mean, you know, Lily's is kind of a catalyst. Everybody's chasing after that brand because it's been kind of first to market and kind of getting it right and meeting the consumer where their needs are in the mass consumption of chocolate. When you think of the naturals industry in general, are you looking at some certain things and kind of going, yeah, we got that right and that right? It may have taken a while. It may have been early on, but anything that you're particularly like, I'm glad we tackled that. That was important for us to do.
I mean, I think we've kind of gotten a lot right, but yeah. I really feel like it's a continuum. You know, I feel like there's always the opportunity to kind of reevaluate and do better both personally and as an industry. So I think we're doing a lot right, but I think there's a lot more that we can be doing.
Yeah.
And I guess I sort of, I sort of view the natural products industry as kind of the thought leaders of overall CPG.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's been a very valuable, it's been really exciting to witness that mm-hmm. evolution, because, prior to that 2000 landmark, occasion.
Yeah.
The natural products industry was largely viewed as, kind of like just crazy little people who
esoteric hippies.
Yeah. who ate yogurt and birdseed. Honestly, that was like one of the things that I feel like I've spent my career doing is kind of, continuing to dispel that myth by trying to meet people where they live, in a place of real non-judgment, and sort of like seducing people into eating better.
Ooh, there you go. I like that approach. Yes. Mm-hmm. What do you think we can be, maybe, where do you think we can be going better? And you know that one of my two agendas with Gooder is for us to, I think we've created a bubble just in the last couple of years of what naturals is. And I'm wanting to open that bubble back out. And I feel like we could be reaching back into communities that we're sort of have been ignoring, or that we could be taking care of better. So that's my personal opinion. And on where we think, where we can be doing better. How do we do that? Or how have you guys been doing that? Whether it's with your work that you're doing personally or through Lily's, how are we starting to, how can we do better stretching out into these markets and these consumers?
Yeah. I mean, Diana, I could not agree with you more. Mm-hmm. And I, I think food equity is a giant topic that we really, are addressing as an industry and need to continue to address. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm like super excited to see, to see Lily's and other natural brands in true mainstream channels. Mm-hmm. And I know that there's been this kind of dynamic tension mm-hmm. about saving, special items for natural only.
Yeah.
And I really, as a former natural products retailer, I truly understand, but I also really, really am proud to see my brand and other natural brands in retailers that are shopped by, people everywhere.
Yeah.
So that they are really accessible to everyone at price points that make them more accessible. So I embrace that expansion mm-hmm. and simultaneously that leads me back to, the fact that I do view the natural products industry as kind of thought leaders.
Yes.
So, I think there's room for everything. And, I think that there will always be a place for specialty retailers,
For sure.
And there will always be a place for expansion. So I'm super excited to see that.
Yeah.
If you ask me something really specific where I think we need to address a very specific need.
Yeah.
I think we are not yet doing a good enough job with regards to sustainable packaging.
Okay.
I think that's a real area for opportunity mm-hmm. that's really still pretty new.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we really need to address it. Mm-hmm. I mean, the I was shared some pictures recently of plastics in landfills,
yeah.
and it was a shocking, it was just a shocking photograph.
Yeah.
And I shared this statistic that even within recycling plants, it's something like only 7% of plastics or 8%, some super low yeah. number are actually being recycled.
Yeah.
So my hope is, and something that I would personally like to get more involved in,
okay.
is how can we solve that? And,
yeah.
and I think there's some super creative, interesting ideas floating around out there, and maybe some interim steps too, but
yeah.
That to me is something that I think as an industry we could be doing better and addressing a little bit more rigorously.
Yeah. Who was I talking to recently? Somebody I interviewed. Oh, her podcast goes live in a couple of weeks. Her name is Maggie from 8-Track Foods, but she said she was talking about the waste that the industry creates in general. Like she said she had an aha moment at the trade show when she was looking around at Expo. I'm looking at yeah. all the waste that the trade show creates. Yeah. So like kind of along the same lines as you, is like, we're thought leaders. We could be doing better. It's almost like two sides of the coin. We have to create something so that we don't continue the situation. And yet there's a big mess to clean up as well, because the stuff that's out there now, something has to be done with that at the same time. So almost like there's two conversations to solve the one common problem. Yeah.
Yes. I totally yeah. agree.
Yeah.
I totally agree. Yeah. Yeah. And there are some really cool initiatives out there now with like collecting food from restaurants and, yes. bringing it to, to populations that need it.
Yeah.
I think the past year has been like so hard, but I also yeah. think, with the pandemic, but I
yeah.
also think that it's, early in the pandemic, I was part of a webinar where the presenter said something about, the pandemic has been everybody's, it's like Mother Nature gave everybody a timeout.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. And I think there's been some spectacular thought, around, really important issues that were perhaps accelerated by the fact that people really had time to think.
Yeah. Well, we had a double whammy, I think, between the pandemic and then a lot of things from the BLM movement and now yes. our Asian families yeah. and communities, can't help to think that it's all sort of related. You get cooped up for a while, everything accelerates, everybody's angry. Politics had absolutely added fuel to the fire. And then we've got media and everybody's translation of that. And it's just kind of turned into this whirlpool. And I think yeah. it distracts us. All of that is distracting us from some of these bigger things like, hey, the planet's being polluted to death. And we're eating toxins and insert, all of this other stuff becomes so noisy that we don't have time to deal with these other issues. Like, sometimes, it's exhausting. Which thing do I want to take on first? So it's good that
yes.
there's folks like yourself that are like, I'm going to commit to this. I really want to. And, that we have groups of people instead of everybody being spread thin, we have groups that do this and groups that do this. So that's, it's pretty fantastic.
Yeah. Well, really well stated, Diana, because, yeah. I guess, look, I'm in a different place in my career. So
yeah.
I have the luxury of, of having to be able to think about this, but
yeah.
you're 100% right. Like there's been so much suffering, and I don't want to suggest for a minute that it's been anything but so sad.
Yeah. But I think your observation is 100% accurate in that there's been a great deal of opportunity to self-reflect because of the timeout. Like,
yeah.
I think everybody's inspecting who they are and how yeah. they who they are within a community, within a family, within the global world. So you're right. It's a giant timeout, and it was much longer than all of us expected. And we still have some timeout time left. Maybe that's a challenge for us, is kind of go before we get back to our crazy schedules, maybe be conscious and aware and make some conscious decisions about how you're going to move forward in life.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Cynthia, I want to talk a little bit. I want to kind of just shift into leadership and mentoring, right? So we've identified that you don't like to be managed. I'm going to use the word managed, but I'm sure you've been mentored. You can't be a leader the way you are now without mentorship. And that may have been indirectly through your family experience, just growing up around that. Clearly an important part of your story. And your brand could not grow without you doing mentorship. You could not do everything. So in some ways, while you do have that, I'm going to do it myself, there's no way Lily's would be where it is now. So it's kind of like the million-dollar question that I think a lot of people have when they want to be a Cynthia Tice, is how do I let go of my baby? And, you know, what are those steps? And was it them? Was it your team that helped you get out of it? Or did you have somebody external? Like, that's the million-dollar question. How do I live on? How do I know my baby's going to be taken care of?
So, you know, when I partnered with private equity.
Yes.
By 2017, I launched Lily's in 2012.
Oh, so fast.
Yes. And I launched with Whole Foods as a national brand.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of an extraordinary, you know, it was pretty extraordinary.
Yes.
And Lily's grew so quickly. And I had by then had a lot of experience with brands. I helped launch some. I did category management for supermarkets. So I had a lot of experience with seeing how brands performed.
Yep.
And I saw Lily's and I was like, oh my God, something extraordinary is happening. Like it's gaining extraordinary acceptance in a really, really fast way.
Yeah.
And my team, when I partnered with VMG, was myself, my two kids who were in their early 20s, and one other person.
Okay.
And I was literally running in place. And yes. I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? Like,
yes.
I'm not a team builder. Like, I am seriously not a team. Like, you know, I was in my 60s. I knew myself well enough to know that's not my skill set. This is my skill set. I did what I'm good at, and I did a good job. But building a team is not my skill set. And that was like the impetus for partnering. So it was VMG who found Jane Miller, who is now Lily's CEO. And Jane built the team. And she did a really fantastic job. So, you know, watching her do what she had the expertise to do has been really rewarding as well. And I just feel really, it was not easy to let go of.
It wasn't.
It wasn't. It was, but I really just felt like it was like Lily's was extraordinary. Like there was something extraordinary happening. And I felt like I really wanted to see it reach its full potential. And I felt like I better do something to facilitate that. And I did a year of due diligence, and this seemed like the best choice. And I feel like it was an excellent choice. And, you know, so it's been like super exciting to watch this new team come on and like take Lily's to the next chapter.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that really helped me, because it was really hard, was that I A, felt like I was doing the right thing, and B, I felt like I was doing it with the right partners.
Yeah.
And C, Jane formalized a lot of the values that I put into the company.
Yeah.
You know, One of my biggest messages to entrepreneurs is like, your brand can really reflect your values.
Yeah.
Like, make sure that it does. You know, it, it, it's a real opportunity to, you know, it's like your brand is like a blank canvas that you can paint with your, with, you know, with your values. So I was super happy that that was really important to me. And that was, you know, really maintained.
Yeah. Well, it's not uncommon, you know, the firm that I work for, Retail Voodoo, we work with a lot of entrepreneurs in that transition time. And I think it speaks volumes of who, first of all, you have the perfect trifecta. We've got somebody who's passionate about what they're doing. That's you, Cynthia. Then you've got a partner like Wayne, right? Wayne specifically, I don't know him personally, but I've seen who he is and how he shows up in the industry, understands entrepreneurs and the special relationship that entrepreneurs have with their brand. And instead of strongholding kind of mentors an entrepreneur through that transition. And then the bringing on of Jane, who also understands the special relationship between a brand and an entrepreneur. I think those are the that critical understanding of the relationship. You're really lucky. That doesn't happen all the time.
Yes, I am. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, I agree.
And not only that, but then when you have that right partnership, then your brand, like you said, gets to fully express itself to its greatest ability, because sometimes I'm an entrepreneur myself. Sometimes we entrepreneurs get in our own way and make decisions, emotional decisions that maybe aren't always in our best interest. And so how wonderful that Lily's not only grew so quickly, 5 years for that kind of growth is pretty phenomenal. And then, since VMG now, I mean, it's exploding. And it's really great that you were able to have that observation, because not all entrepreneurs can have that sense of awareness. And sometimes it takes until your 60s. I get it. Sometimes it takes.
Yeah. Hopefully you get wise as you get older, right? It makes it worthwhile, right?
I understand. So really quick, before we get into the last part of the interview, tell me a little bit about why mentoring entrepreneurs is so important for you right now.
Well, it's another way to remain in the industry. So that's like this selfish part of it, or
totally, you know,
the personal part of it. But it's also like a way to give back. So it's a win-win. You know. So you know, I love the industry, and I have had such a wonderful time here, and I'm not done.
Yeah.
And you know, part of the way that I can remain is to help other people.
Yeah.
So I love mentoring. I love, you know, I'm loving the work that I'm doing. Lily's is an early adopter in the JEDI Collaborative.
Yes.
And that kind of became my project for Lily's. And so I attended the early adopter circle and the CEO circle, and it's so powerful and so amazing. So I'm so grateful that I had that opportunity. And Lily's is also a mission-based company, and we donate to childhood wellness initiatives.
I love it.
And I'm the chair of the charitable giving committee.
Oh,
so that's
wonderful.
Been really rewarding.
Yes.
So, I mean, the work that I remain active in has been just, you know, it's been just really personally rewarding, and it's also provided, you know, an opportunity for me to kind of expand and do things that I haven't done before, like collaboration. So that's kind of good too.
That's so funny. It's so funny. I think we might be daughters from an adopted mother or something. Like, I'm just hearing so much about how I operate coming from you. It's fun to see that. I just wonder, you already kind of talked about this a little bit, but is there some advice that you find yourself consistently giving to entrepreneurs, particularly those that are looking to do a transition, like they're looking forward to that transition?
So I would say, like, I haven't really, I haven't really had the opportunity yet to mentor people who have been approaching a transition.
Oh, okay. So more earlier
but,
on.
But I think if I did, I would encourage them to really be thoughtful about their expectations and communicate those expectations up front, mm-hmm. so that everyone can align. Because yeah. I think that that's where people can really get tripped up. Yeah. You know, if one person is thinking one thing and another person is yes. thinking another, you know, and there's not true alignment and understanding. Mm-hmm. So I really encourage that. I think actually, Diana, there could be a lot more dialogue around, you know, around the role of a founder through transitioning. I think it's a really interesting topic. Okay. And it's something that Jane and I have talked about a lot. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think it's an interesting topic.
Yeah. But
just for overall, my advice for entrepreneurs is to really understand that, that the influence their business can have in terms of reflecting their values. And I think just from a practical standpoint, to never underestimate the amount of time that you're going to spend in your business. So you should absolutely love what you do.
Amen. That's wonderful. Thank you. Cynthia, thank you so much for sharing about these things. I have a last few questions that I like to ask everybody. So the first one is there any kind of interesting fact that you like to share about chocolate or Lily's or just the industry in general, some sort of happy hour tidbit?
Okay, so this is my favorite actual tidbit.
Okay.
And this is geared to helping people to understand how small changes can lead to bigger ones.
Okay.
So if you are striving to reduce sugar,
yeah,
and you want to make a batch of chocolate chip cookies,
yes,
and you substitute no sugar chocolate chip like Lily's chocolate chips uh-huh. in the recipe and do nothing else differently.
Yes.
You know, so you don't, you're still making your recipe with brown sugar and regular sugar.
Yeah.
If you substitute Lily's chocolate chips for regular chocolate chips in the recipe, you will save over 100 grams of sugar in that recipe.
Wow.
And you won't notice it.
You probably won't even miss it. You won't miss it at all. No, because nope. Stevia is even a little bit sweeter, if I remember correctly. Does Stevia have yeah. just a slightly sweeter flavor or sweetness to it?
Stevia is actually 200 to 300 times as sweet as sugar.
Ooh, okay, so yeah. a lot sweeter. So you could yeah. cut your sugar back if you wanted to and have the same kind of flavor or yeah. sweetness in the cookie. Okay, yeah. That's fun. Let's talk about some... other women leaders or women rising stars that you are excited to be watching and that could maybe use a little shout out right now?
So my personal favorite rising star is a woman named Audra Wilford.
Okay.
And she is not in our industry per se. She actually is the founder of two organizations. One is a nonprofit called the Max Love Project.
Okay.
And they are the recipient of the most of Lily's charitable donations.
Oh.
Because so Audra is Max's mother, and Max is, I think, 13, and he was diagnosed with brain cancer when he was 3.
Mm.
And he is doing really well because his parents have committed their lives to thrivership.
Thrivership, and, okay.
And they began to, when Max received his diagnosis, they began to focus on quality of life and ways that he could just thrive in the face of this illness for as long as he could.
Mm.
And they learned as they went, and they did a lot of adjunct treatment, you know, in addition to chemotherapy and radiation and surgery and, you know, traditional medical treatment. They also developed this whole plethora of evidence-based strategies to assist him as he went through, you know, as he lived his life. Mm-hmm. And they shared with countless other families whose children had also been diagnosed, and hence the Max Love Project was born. And they have partnered with dietitians and children's hospitals and oncologists, and they just bring enormous hope and relief to just families all over the country. And honestly, I am so impressed with people who use their opportunity, whether it be opportunity born from privilege or strife, mm-hmm. to lift up people around them. Like, it, to me, that's just super impressive. And I can't think of anyone that has done a better job than this woman, Audra. So wow. She's my rising star.
And I love it.
Yeah. And she's now started a for-profit business called Family Thrive that okay. they're launching now. And it's an app, and I can't articulate a lot about it, but it sounds like it's going to be a really cool thing too.
Well, we'll have the link on the show notes when the when it goes live for those people that want to listen to it, learn more. What brands or trends are you watching right now? Anything that you're excited about?
I mean, I remain excited about lower sugar. I think that's really the next logical extension of better for you.
Yeah.
And I'm excited about improvements to ingredients that support that. Again, for me, I'm super interested in sustainability, particularly around packaging. And I have been seeing some really exciting things around that as well.
Excellent.
So, you know, I really would like to see how we get with regards to improvement in sustainability.
Mm. And then how are you keeping yourself sane these days? You sound like sanity for you means remaining busy. So I'm curious how you're going to answer this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I love walking around Philly, and I've been doing a whole lot of it. And I have been joining some boards. So I feel super lucky that I joined a board called Naturally Network.
Yes.
That's a sort of a newly founded nonprofit that is facilitating Naturally Boulder and the affiliate yes. chapters of Naturally Austin, San Diego, Chicago, New York, I hope I didn't miss anybody, but and that's been super rewarding. It's very new to me. I'm kind of learning as I go, but I really love it, and I just feel so fortunate to be working on that. And I'm pretty physically active. I like to exercise, and I like yoga. And finally, I'm a really avid wine drinker. So I've been doing a lot of that.
I'm sure you have. I've heard that wine consumption has gone up considerably in the last 12 months. I wonder why.
Well, I've done my share.
How do you like people to connect with you if they want to reach out? Are you a social media? Or do you prefer they reach out to you directly via an email?
LinkedIn is great.
Okay.
Yeah, LinkedIn would be great.
Great. And it's Cynthia Tice, T-I-C-E, correct?
Correct. Correct.
All right. I love it. Thank you for your time and your commitment to the community and for your time today. It's been such a joy to meet you and just learn about, you know, kind of some of those pivotal moments in our industry and how you are like, just keep pushing things forward. I love it. Thank you so much.
Oh, and thank you, Diana. And thank you for also your Gooder podcast and for supporting female entrepreneurs and for recognizing that, you know, that we do use our businesses to do good. And mm-hmm. I think you and I are kindred spirits in that sense. And delighted to meet you.
Oh, thank you. Well, have a good rest of your day, and we'll see you next time.
This episode is sponsored by Retail Voodoo, a creative marketing firm specializing in growing, fixing, and reinventing brands in the food, beverage, wellness, and fitness industries. If your naturals brand is in need of positioning, package design, or marketing activation, we're here to help. You can find more information at retail-voodoo.com. And so there you go. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you so much for hanging out with us today. And if you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to this channel and share with your network. Until next time, be well and do gooder.